Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 8 of Robot Radio, and we are headed in to the final week of spring training 2010.
You had better leave that bloogly agla in the recording.
I will see.
Yeah, I'm excited for the end of spring, but what the exciting thing for me right now is seeing guys finally starting to look in some semblance of in-season shape. Like, we're starting to see the stretched out outings, the, you know, not subbing everyone out in the fourth inning and stuff like that. Yeah, we're still having our late game replacements, but it's starting to look more like baseball and less like, you know, spring training.
Especially for the pitchers. We're now obviously seeing our starting pitchers go 6 innings. Cook went 6 today. We're probably going to see De La Rosa go 6 tomorrow. And, you know, that's always exciting. And great news about Cook today, I have to say. He looked much better than anything we had seen so far. And, I mean, it was great news earlier in the week to hear that he did well against minor leaguers, but it's a lot more comforting to see him go out in against an actual MLB-caliber lineup and succeed.
And it sounds like he's doing what Aaron Cook does best, too. He pitched 6 innings. He walked 2. Only struck out 2, but, you know, if Cook strikes out 4 in an outing, it's a pretty intense day for him. But more importantly, he had 11 ground outs to 7 air outs, which is also promising. It seems that stretching out session he had with Olivo really worked well for him.
Yeah, of course, hopefully, knowing Aaron Cook's game, he'll get to improve that ratio even more. I'm not saying it's a bad ratio, but 11 to 7 is kind of average-ish.
It leads to at least believe that his sinker's working, got a couple double plays, even that, you know, that weird line-out pick-off double play.
Yeah, that was
whatever,
interesting.
Double play.
In other pitching news from the game today, Tim Redding had his worst outing so far, I think, and basically, the news had been that the bullpen spot was basically narrowed down to 3. It was going to be Redding, Spire, or Joe Beimel, who actually, I guess, signed after we did the last podcast. So, yay, we have Beimel back.
Yeah, I'm a fan of getting Beimel back. And what's kind of impressing me, well, surprising more than impressing me, is the way they're saying that he is a lot further along than where everyone expected he would be at this point. They're saying, oh, well, he's not going to be ready for 3 weeks into the season because he hasn't had spring training. Well, they're saying from what he's looked like throwing, you know, sessions and such like that, that he's looking a lot more prepared for the season than everyone expected.
Yeah, it has been kind of amusing to watch because you get the reports back-to-back. There's an interview with Beimel, then an interview with O'Dowd or Tracy, and it's basically been like, Beimel says, I'm going to be ready to go. And then you have O'Dowd saying, we know he's not going to be ready to go, but he seems to think that he's ready to throw against batters. So we've scheduled him to throw against batters tomorrow. And then, like, the day after, it's Jim Trace, and he says, wow.
Well, it speaks a lot to his work ethic, his realization this is kind of a big deal for him to, you know, this could be his shot to establish any sort of remain value and get a contract next year with anyone. So to show that, hey, I'm ready to show up and work my butt off to prove that I'm major league ready is a big deal for him.
I'm still not sure he's going to make the team to start. I think Spire's still kind of in the lead for that position, especially since it looks like Beimel is only going to have time to get into 2 games.
Yeah.
But depending on how the early season shapes up, on, you know, who's performing, how much Tracy really thinks he needs that third lefty, and how fast it takes Houston Street to come back, we could be seeing him probably as soon as 1 or 2 weeks in.
No, that makes perfect sense, as we know that Jim Tracy wants his toys, and he loves his lefties, and if they're ready to go, they're ready to go. And my concern is that he's going to focus again too much on, I want to have my lefties, rather than I want the best pitcher filling out my bullpen.
Assuming we have Beimel or Spire going in the final spot, and knowing that throughout the season we're going to have Street and Buckles coming back, we've got some actual depth going on, which is was, in my opinion, not the case earlier on. And I'm just starting to feel a little bit more comfortable with the people that we have.
Yeah, it's a lot more we got some – it's a lot of, you know, vague, you know, sports writer-ish terms. You know, like we got some good, you know, role players and some solid pitchers and things like that. But, you know, even if we're going to be missing our, you know, our glittering closer and stuff like that, we're going to be all right.
Oh, and I also have to totally give credit to Matt Belisle, who's just been fantastic this spring. I thought after three outings, you know, he's had some good luck, but now it's been like five or six, and he's still unscored upon. You know, in five outings, even in the spring, it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So he's earned a bit more respect from me. I've always been hard on Belisle because I'm bitter at how he got on the team. But yeah, I think he's stepped forward and he's shown that he deserves a spot regardless of his contract. And I'm excited to see what, if anything, he's able to do. Now, he's also only been pitching one inning at a time, which I don't think that it's as simple as, oh, all of a sudden he's not going to be able to pitch for multiple innings. But at the same time, I'm wondering if they're going to try to turn somebody else into the long reliever.
I wouldn't be surprised to hear that at all. It sounds a lot like they're going to try to make, you know, really convert Belisle from being the typical or the prototypical, hey, you're a starter, now you're in the bullpen, you're in long relief, but see if they can actually turn him into an effective inning reliever, you know, come in and be a nice bridging pitcher.
That might change, though, if now that we know Redding is probably not going to be in that seventh spot, although they've been pitching Spire two innings at a time, so they might be looking at having him be the temporary long reliever.
Which might not be a bad call, kind of prove that he can still get major league hitters out.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's had a very good spring as well. I'm at least somewhat confident in him, and he's not had that bad of a career. He's had an off couple years, but where he was being completely overpaid, admittedly. But now that we have him basically dirt cheap, he could, just as you were kind of describing with Bimal earlier, he could have an opportunity here to show that he's still got it.
Yeah, with a lot of these minor league contract kind of guys, like we hear LaDuca, it's kind of funny. Our pitching situation is obviously different than Paul LaDuca, because LaDuca is just trying to say, hey, I like this club. They were interested in me. No one else had an offer on the table, so I took it. I know I'm not going to make the team, but there's going to be some team down the line that's, you know, catching starred that might want to pick me up.
Yeah, he's already had one or two teams actually say that they're considering, should the offer arise, were he to go on waivers or be released, to see whether or not that they might actually pick him up, which is certainly good news for him, because there's really no place for him in the organization, even at AAA. There's not even really a place for him.
Yeah, pretty much. It kind of seems like with our I'm thinking about the way our pitchers and position players will differ in that regard, that our position players are just kind of trying to come in and say, hey, I'm healthy, give me a job. I can still do this, get me a job. With a lot of our pitchers coming in, especially in this situation like with Spire, they're coming in to pitch, and if they make the club, they're pitching in Coors Field, and if they can do it effectively enough, I can't picture any team who wouldn't be like, wow, they still have it in them because they just did that in Coors Field. Whereas hitters coming, he's got nothing left in the tank. It was Coors Field.
Well, I don't think, barring any crazy injuries, we're going to have any of our NRI position players making the team.
Oh, no, it would have to be catastrophe for anyone like Jay Payton or remind me the name of the first baseman.
Which one?
Guy who hit two home runs the other day.
Brad Eldred?
Yes, thank you.
He's not an NRI, but
no?
No, he's just a minor leaguer. He got signed, but he's been in minor league camp the entire time.
Oh, okay, my mistake. But I guess the point is he's not going to make the club.
No, he won't. I guess I would say he was never really in consideration. He's made an impression, and they're probably going to put him on the Sky Sox along with Mike Polk. And that'll allow them to keep Kindle and a couple other people down in Tulsa, which is probably where they belong.
It'd be cool if Eldred could make some sort of an impact down there. And I don't know. I mean, granted, he's still going to be blocked, but you see the point. They just be like, hey, good for you, big guy.
Right. And I mean, he's an example of somebody who is much more decent minor league filler than usual. He's still pretty young. He's like, I don't remember his exact age, but he's not older than 30. And, you know, he was at one point considered a pretty decent prospect. And if he can rediscover himself, then, you know, even if it's not with us, again, he's decent minor league filler. And he could at worst, you know, be an emergency utility player or something if we needed him to.
Mm-hmm.
Like if Giambi trips and falls on his face or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny that you brought up, you know, role fillers and people like that. I was talking to a friend about the Mariners earlier today, it was on Saturday's Rock Pile, and Jay Rockies and I were talking about how Ken Griffey Jr. is really a DH at best, and I was commenting how Milton Bradley needs to be their DH, but I really see Griffey for them being kind of like Giambi is for us. He really should be a, you know, great clubhouse guy and pinch hitter and maybe back up like first base. And I know that he's a center fielder by reputation. Well, not anymore anyways, but I think you see my point that he's a, if he goes out in the field, you'll be able to hear his joints screeching like old rusted metal. So, but anyways, back to the Rockies, though. It's good to hear that minor leaguers are doing well. This spring has been pretty exciting for a lot of bats, even if they're not, you know, really impact bats like Aldridge. Like, Stewart had two doubles. Or was it two doubles or just two hits?
I think it was doubles.
What?
I think it was two doubles.
Yeah, the point is, big hit. I mean, they're getting hits, and Stewart made that pretty good grab, you know, throw from one knee down to throw out Lillibridge. It's good to hear Stewart doing good defensive things right now.
Yeah.
Along with the good offensive things.
Let's talk a little bit about this news that they have assigned the rotation order for at least the start of the season. And it is exactly what Tracy had said way back in the winter meetings. And we were all laughing at and saying that there was no way it was going to happen. Basically, Jimenez is, I mean, common sense, our ace. And then we have Francis in the number two, Cook in the number three, De La Rosa at number four, and Hamill at number five. Now, just real quick, I do want to say one thing I like about this rotation. I like Cook at number three. I think that I had him at two at the beginning, but even with his good outing today and his good outing against the minor leaguers earlier in the week, I still think he's starting to get effective a little too late, and I think he's going to be a little bit unstable early on. I'm not saying he's going to be giving up, you know, 10 runs a game, but I think he's going to have a couple games where he's getting hit around, and he's still going to have a couple things to work on. So that I'm okay with. But I would much rather have somebody else in number two. Besides Francis. And I think I'd honestly, based upon the spring, I almost called him Jim Hamill, Jason Hamill's been having, I would prefer him at number four, and I would honestly put Francis at the fifth spot, which means I'd probably, you know, with my admitted lack of experience or, you know, understanding of how the rotation is best set up, I would put De La Rosa in the number two spot.
Part of me is concerned that that Jim Tracy put Jeff Francis in the two spot just to kind of be right. You know what I mean? That he said, I think Francis is going to be good enough to be our number two. And now Francis is our number two. The reason I like it outside of, well, whatever Tracy's thinking, the reason I like it is De La Rosa and Jimenez are our power pitchers. I would rather mix that up a little bit and kind of keep teams on their toes. So
that's a good point. I hadn't seen anybody bring that up yet.
Ubaldo has the fastest fastball in the majors on average. We know that. And De La Rosa's pumping 95 easy, so it's not as if he's, you know, a slow baller. Cook doesn't, I mean, I'm not trying to say Cook's a slow baller, because when he was coming up, I mean, he could hit 96. But now that he's kind of moved, now that it's like, you know, sinker and some sort of breaking ball back and forth and back and forth, you know, you see it 91, 92, maybe a little bit higher, depending on, you know, what kind of reach back he's got there. But he's not as much of a power pitcher, and we all know that. He's a contact pitcher. He's stuff like that. Hamill's, you know, not to badmouth Jason Hamill, as everyone knows I love him by now, but he's kind of neither a finesse pitcher nor a power pitcher, but he's somewhere in the middle or something like that. You can't really lump him into either group. He doesn't walk too many, but he's also not blowing anybody away. And then you're left with Francis, who's our soft-tossing lefty. So just based on that, you got Ubaldo Jimenez jamming 98-mile-per-hour fastballs down your throat, and then you come up the next day, I'll shake it up, and Jeff Francis, you're kind of looking at your watch waiting for the ball to hit home plate.
I really like this this argument. You've almost won me over. In fact, I was about to go on a small rant about it, but I think that there is definitely credence to mixing up the style that the pitchers have. I mean, we already know that there's at least some potential advantage to separating the arm angle or arm direction of different players, left versus right. How much, of course, is up for debate. But so I kind of understand now that when you look at the layout, you basically have your top three in a diverse group, and then you have De La Rosa leading Hamill in kind of a small recycle of the same thing, or of the same differential between those different styles. So I'm kind of into it.
It's cool. I mean, the trouble is when you worry too much about mixing and matching, some days just throw the two guys. It doesn't matter. When it comes to playoff time, I want my best two pitchers being 1-2. If Francis is somehow our second best pitcher on the team, by all means, I will not complain about it. But if we're just going to stick with this whole, you know, veteran, have faith in him, whatever, I don't know. I just really don't know about that kind of stuff. Right. But let's remember that over the course of a season, I agree with not lumping lefties, and I agree with not lumping, I think we shouldn't lump our power pitchers. I mean, you think the 1-2 punch, but again, that's kind of a playoff thing. In the meantime, they're going to get 32 looks at, you know, or 32 starts, assuming, you know, health and all that jazz. So we might as well just kind of keep people off balance a little bit.
So about the ordering of the rotation, I might as well bring up that I still am interested in doing some sort of experiment or review of some of the matchups over the past few years. It's been something I've really been interested in doing, but it's going to take a lot of time, which I really just don't have right now. But I kind of want to see. I want to find some tangible evidence, some look at just how little the stacking of the rotation really matters during the regular season. Now, I do understand and recognize that, one, teams operate on different schedules with different off days, which means as time goes by, especially after the first couple weeks, the rotations don't align anymore, meaning that you have a number two against a number three or maybe even a number four or something. It just doesn't match up quite so neatly. The thing that's bothering me is it seems to me just from again, I would rather investigate this before I make the claim, but it just seems to me that it still seems more likely that your number two pitcher is more likely to face number ones and number threes than number fours and number fives. That might not be the case at all. There could be so many more factors, injuries, unpredictable things of that sort that really knock that out of balance. And again, it's no guarantee either. I'm not trying to say that even if there weren't those factors there, that it's really all that important either, because anything could get messed up at any time, and then it's just all out of order to begin with anyway. But at the same time, I don't necessarily know that vulnerability is also necessarily an excuse for not stacking your pitchers so the best ones get the most outings, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, think about it this way too. If you if you're saying your number two is going to face a lot of ones and threes, won't your number one be facing a lot of fives and twos?
Yes.
So maybe should we think twice about really having your number one be your number one?
I've thought about that before. I'm curious to see. I'm almost thinking that if I go through, which is kind of one of the plans of attack I was thinking about doing, if I somehow am able to, you know, assign subjectively some kind of, you know, this is a number one spot, this is a number two spot, and then the same for an opponent's team, I'm almost wondering if, like, the average difficulty of the opponent is going to be lower for pitcher number one than pitcher number two, simply because they're going to hit. In fact, this happened a lot with Aaron Cook last year before he got hurt. In the first half of the season, it seemed like every other thing he was pitching against another, he was pitching against like some rookie call up or a regular number five. And of course, Aaron Cook was our number one at the start of last season.
Yeah.
And that always kind of made me laugh. And of course, it worked out for us because Aaron Cook was our worst pitcher at the time.
Yeah.
He kept facing, like, I think he was against Chris Medlin when he made his major league debut. And there were a couple other instances where he hit, like, random number fives, which led me to believe that, you know, the number one is primed to hit those cases every once in a while.
Well, see, my thought on it is, and when it comes to, if we're just going to talk about pitching matchups, never mind the teams on the field, never mind anything else, just we're going to assume that the team is going to play static and that the number one, that the pitchers facing off are going to be the most impact in the game. I think this is from Sun Tzu's Art of War, and I might be misquoting this, or not misquoting it, but misattributing it, but I'm going to pretend it's from Sun Tzu's Art of War, even if it's not, so I feel smart. But it's the idea is, if I have three horses, and they're all distinctly my best horse, my middle horse, and my worst horse, and my opponent has three horses, distinctly his best, middle, and worst, it would make the most sense for me to stack my worst against his best, because while I'll lose that one, I'll be able to put my best against his second best, and then my second best against his worst, so that thereby I have a better chance of winning two out of three other than direct matchups. The thing with baseball, though, is obviously there's more to the game than just your starting pitcher. But I'm just thinking off a very loose, you know, logic. If we're going to put this much weight on a pitching matchup, we should probably, you know, why aren't we strategizing like that? And the reason is obviously because there's more, there's bullpens to think about, there's the bats to think about, there's...
So, in the end, even if somehow I am correct in that there may be more to read into it than we're attributing, it may still end up not really mattering all that much because it's still not really all that important of a factor to begin with. And I do recognize that strategy. There have been some other things where I've seen, you know, oh, we'll put our worst player against their best, so we waste them, and we will have an advantage over every other thing because it'll be 1-2, 2-3, 3, etc.
Yeah, yeah. The only problem is those when. I remember I first thought this up. Well, not thought this up, but was reading about it and thought, we should apply this during the World Series. And a lot of the problem is that, you know, Curt Schilling was probably better than Francis, and I'm gonna go ahead and say he was better than Francis. And Daisuke, at that point in his career, Daisuke was better than Ubaldo, and then Lester was better than Fogg, and even if we did shift everything down once and just sacrifice that first game by pitching Fogg against, you know, Beckett, we probably would have lost anyways. Past that first week or two of baseball, it's just a respect issue. And I'm not sure whether to look into it that deeply because, you know, what's not to respect about Aaron Cook? What's not to respect about, you know, why does Jeff Francis deserve number two that much more than Cook? And
I still just really want to see if there's something else to it. I feel like if I eventually just apply the time to go through the entire 2009 season, figure out some kind of system, which I think I can do, to at least somehow indicate the right direction of measurement in terms of how these matchups happen. I'm really interested to see if our upper end rotation pitchers, which are again, quote unquote, arguably the best, face up more often against the upper level pitchers of opponents' teams, which are again, arguably the best, quote unquote.
Well, here's the problem with the study though, is you got to think about, like when I did my, my brief study on Hamill and how he was better than, you know, he was the best number four starter in the league as a number five starter. Is the way baseball reference lined out who your 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 were, and they
right, which I wouldn't trust that. I'd have to make those kind of determinations on my own, which is again, I would never say that such a thing would be some sort of scientific proof. It's just I want to see if there's patterns in there that I can find that might indicate some other level of operation there. I might find nothing. I might find that my own determinations completely ruin the study, and it's invalid anyway. But it's just something that is curious to me. It's always the case when there's something out there where, oh, we just look at it and we know that they stop matching up after 2 weeks, that let's just stop thinking about it there. We could. I just want to see if I can find anything else. That's all.
Well, a lot of it too is when we want to try to talk about it after the season's over, or I mean during the season, after the you know the order's been thrown away. When people say, "Yeah, well, our number two is better than your number two," part of me wants to say, "Well, who's your number two?" And they'll be like, "John Lester," and I'll be like, is he really your number? Does he pitch after Beckett still, or has that been thrown away? I don't know. And it mostly just kind of becomes a pissing contest to me.
The same also goes with Greg Smith in his year for Oakland, where he was essentially their number two the entire year.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. He's our number. Well, at this point, I'd be happy to say he's our number six.
Yeah, he is our number six.
I can get on board him being our number six. I'm okay.
Unless you're on the you're taking a position that Francis shouldn't be making the team, then he's our number six.
Well, he wasn't sharp yesterday, Friday. That is, I don't know. They must be something I don't.
Well, I think Francis is our number five. Just again, even just from the convenience standpoint, Smith can be optioned down.
And I'm not trying to badmouth Francis and say that he hasn't worked hard enough or anything like that. It's more just an issue of, do you think he's really ready to get thrown back in there like that?
Right, and I'm honestly not sure. I think that giving him the number five spot is something that we can't really determine ourselves because we haven't seen how effective he's been outside of the actual gameplay area or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
If they're putting him there, you know, it's always possible that, just like we said, might be behind the decision to put him in number two. There could be just a, you know, you're important to the team. You were a really important factor in its past. We want to give you we're showing our confidence in you by giving you the opportunity from the get-go. That could be the case, but at the same time, they might really think he's ready. And I hope they really think he's ready. If he's not, then something else will have to happen. We'll have to find a way to put him back on the DL or move him to the bullpen or something.
Well, he's got that option here still, right?
Yeah, but even though it's Jeff Francis and we don't really have any reason to think that Jeff Francis wouldn't accept the assignment, he's past the point where he can be optioned down by himself. He has to give consent.
Well, my thought is that if we actually had to think about optioning Francis to AAA, it wouldn't be, boy, you suck, boy. It'd be, look, we think we might have rushed you. We're sorry for rushing you. I mean, there was a bad, we respect the amount of work you put into it, blah, blah, blah. The point is more, we think you still could use some remedial time here. We should have started you out in late spring training or something like that.
Right.
And you know, try to be a mutual, like, we want you to get better and be effective this season. We just don't think – we think we pushed you a little too fast, too far this season. You don't look ready. We'd like you to take just a few starts in the minors, see if there's something you're missing down there. When you find it, swing back. Greg will take your spot while you're gone, and then the two of you will just flip-flop. And, you know, just thinking about skill sets, they're both soft-tossing lefties with disgusting change-ups. I don't think we'd miss that much.
Yeah, well, I mean, except Francis has a higher ceiling than does Smith.
Obviously.
If he's not hitting that ceiling, it doesn't really matter.
I must be the only person left who really thinks that he may not be ready.
No, I think he may not be ready. I just don't – I'm not going to – based on his spring performance, I think it's something we should keep in mind. I'm also not going to say that he doesn't necessarily deserve a chance to go. His arm hasn't fallen off. In terms of his actual health, everything they said about his condition seems to be the case. He's getting his velocity back. All that's left is he's still remembering how to pitch.
Again, I know he's a hard worker. They're saying that, you know, everybody is impressed with how hard Jeff Francis works, et cetera, et cetera. Let's keep that in mind, blah, blah, blah. I've been saying blah, blah, blah about this podcast, haven't I? If I were running the team, I'd say, look, it has nothing to do with your lack of work. It has nothing to do with anything like that. It's just the fact that we have 10 days where we don't have to worry about it. We only need four starters. Let's burn your final option year. Have you start those first 10 days out in minor league camp or extended spring training. Just see how you're looking there. Give you one or two more good sessions in there. Then call you up and we'll just use the extra roster spot for another bullpen person or another bench bat or something like that.
Maybe. Again, he still has to approve it, and I wouldn't say he wouldn't, but at the same time, I don't know if that would, even if we were friendly and approachable about it, I don't know if that would really hurt his impression of our confidence in him.
Well, that's a tricky thing, is trying to find a way to say that isn't, hey, we have no confidence in you, and saying in a way that is, we just want to make sure that you are healthy. And don't want to get you out there and watch you get shelled and then blow your confidence.
Which you would think somebody with his personality would completely agree with. But, You just don't know. It's one of those questions that it would have to actually happen for us to know how it would turn out.
We'd have to make a free body diagram of the leverage and force and torque being put on his shoulder and exactly how the tensile strength of his labrum is, and then he'd understand it.
I will go over the schedule for next week. Again, this is the final week of the spring. Let's see. Tomorrow's game doesn't matter because it will have happened in the past. Monday, the 29th, at Texas, 2:05. Tuesday, the 30th, Dodgers at home, 2:10. Wednesday, the 31st, is Arizona at home at 2:10. That's the last High Corbett game.
How sad.
April 1st, April Fool's Day, at Chicago Cubs, 2:05 in Mesa, Arizona. And then on Friday, we have an interesting situation because it's the first and only evening spring training game we play. What?
My first spring training game ever was at High Corbett Field, Rockies versus Padres at night.
Yeah, this was the only one we played this spring. We're the home team. We're playing in Seattle, but we're in Albuquerque. And then we play again, this time earlier than usual. That's 12:05 p.m. Saturday the 3rd, also in Albuquerque, and this time we're the visiting team against Seattle. And then that's the last spring training game. Sunday the 4th is off, and Monday, which is when our next episode airs, it's opening day.
I cannot wait for opening day.
I think that about wraps it up. On behalf of Andrew and myself, take care.